always done that. So even when I was in the reserve at a party when I was in college, I would always be able to make anything happen that I felt that I wanted to happen. Even this thing that I'm doing for the Jewish Community Center in Petersburg, it's like an impossible dream to do all the things that we're doing, but somehow, you know, we're going to do it, get it done. And, you know, I told you, I think I told you during one person, and I think if we could convey to all the Jews and everybody that one person can make a difference with the help, I always have to qualify that, with the help of a lot of other people. But if you can motivate people, it's a motivational thing, you know, to be able to say, you know, this is really going to happen. And the way to motivate people is you have to have credibility. You know, you have to have the credibility to be willing to do what it takes to make it happen. Credibility, you know, if people believe in me or anybody else, they're going to react. And that's what's important. If you look at the leaders in the Jewish community and the other community, generally, they're able to motivate, you know, to motivate people by the fact that that they have the credibility to say, okay, I think this person can get it done. And just as an example, when I was in the service, I felt that I would be wasted. I was just a private, I was in reserve, but I would be wasted by just being a soldier. So I finally got in the position of working in the service club in Williamsburg, right outside of Williamsburg, Fort Eustis, and I was the social director of the service club, with no uniform, because of being able to show them and convince them that I was able to do this. Really made quite a difference in their programs, you know, that they had. And it's not that I'm bragging, it's just that I think that people have to prove to other people who they are, wherever it is. You know, you have to show people who you are. If you leave a blank, then you're just going to be a blank. And I think that most of your leaders in the Jewish community who you interview, you probably see the same.
Well, it seems to me you also have a talent for falling into a pile of garbage and coming up smelling roses.
No, that's just luck. You know, I mean, I could have gone on that other ship.
You know what luck is?
Muzzle.
it's a combination of preparation and opportunity meeting.
You have to make things happen. Give you another example. When I was married, my wife and I went to Rome. We're going to Rome. It was my first trip to Rome, and I wanted to see them. I just heard that the Vatican Gardens are beautiful, and so I you have to send a letter in, and it's just and then when you get there, you go to the office. So I get there in the Rome. Of course, I've always wanted to have like an audience with a Pope. I thought that was like the greatest, to have an audience with a Pope. I got to Rome. You had to go to the offices, the papal offices. I go to the papal office, and I heard that day the Pope was going to have an audience. Now, there's a private audience is more like they have 50 people. That's, you know, the personal audiences could be one-on-one. The private audience is a little bit bigger than that. So I had heard that he was going to have a private audience. So I go up to the offices, and one of the Swiss guards is there, speaks English, and says, who was the person that you talked to about having an audience for the Pope? And he said, you have to talk to the Secretary of the Vatican, the Secretary of State. So I said, okay. So I walked, so I said, where are the Vatican Gardens office? And he directed me. The first office I hit was the Secretary of the Vatican. So I said to my wife, let's walk in. So I walk in, there's a little Italian priest standing there. Was his secretary, and I said, I would like to have an audience with a Pope. And I said, I'd like to talk to the Secretary of the Vatican. so he didn't speak any English really, and I pulled out this letter. Well, he couldn't read the letter, and it was a letter about the office. Now, I had heard, the Swiss Guard had told me that if you were newly married, or you were some kind of a, like a sports venue, or some, anyway, I get in to see the Secretary of Vatican, and I say, I would really like to have an audience with Pope. I mentioned some names here, like the cardinal that was here, wasn't the cardinal, was here, Wright, Bishop Wright, who went to the Vatican. And I started throwing out names, and then I said, he said, well, it would really be impossible. I said, well, you know, my wife and I are newly married. We want to know if we're married. So he continues on. So he says, here's a gift from the Holy Father. And he gives me a coin that's called, but I didn't know what it was at the time. It's called paper money, and it's got the Peter and Paul on it. It's a beautiful gold coin. It's not solid, it's a gold coin. And it's a very important piece. And then he gave my ex-wife a crucifix that was from the Holy Father. And then he writes on the paper, give this to the inside, gave it to the priest. Takes and directs us, and he doesn't speak in English, he's taking us up through the back door, opens the door, and it's St. Peter. And we have an audience for the Pope. So, the point of that is that if you don't ask, you don't get. I have no qualms about anything in that respect. And to, the worst thing anybody could say, I'm not afraid of rejection or refusal. Again, the lesson is that, to be any kind of a leader, you really can't be into rejection or unless you're diving into something that's a hornet's nest and you're hurting somebody by doing it. And that's really, I think, what leadership is all about. It's just always amazed me, of course, as I've developed through the years, that it's amazing what you can do if you have chutzpah and you're able to, there's nothing you can do. Providing you have the will, and the guts to do it. And there's so many things you can accomplish, but you have to build up to it. And I know that this is for people to read in a later time. And my best advice to anybody that is looking for leadership rules is to follow those rules. Don't think that something can't be accomplished. Just move on and make it part of your life.
Talking about moving on, you mentioned that when you left Cuba the last time, you were persona non grata. You were on somebody's list.
No. That was in 1982.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, how did you go from that status to being photographed while chumming with the doctor? Right.
Because they never, I was pretty sure, if I had known that they, for sure, that they, I was pretty sure that they wouldn't really remember this because they don't, if you go through customs in the United States, they have this computer and they go through the computer and they can have your name for 9 years if you do something. But in Cuba, it's not so mechanical. Or, especially in 1982, their computers are nothing. They still are very limited in that respect. So I thought that there was a possibility. But even a possibility is a little scary to come. Now, I've been pulled off the plane in Cuba, too. I was on the plane one time by myself, and they came on the plane 5 minutes before it was ready, and they Stanley Cohen. There was something that bothered them in my luggage that I didn't exactly know what it was, because I don't really take anything that... I take a lot of drugs, and some of these drugs are, needles and things like that. Some of them are, I don't know how they're going to react to some of the things I take. I take prescription drugs, either in the United States or there. I could be challenged about these drugs. It's really borderline, some of the stuff I take. But you know, I'm doing it for the right reasons, so I don't feel like I have anything to hide. I have nothing to hide. But they pulled me off the plane. There was something in my bag that bothered me. But what had happened is, of course, I was more nervous about missing the plane because I missed the plane. They had my papers. They had my visa. It would have been murder to try to straighten anything out. You know, just, they try, and they're good people, but if something goes wrong, it is a nightmare to straighten out. Time before last, I flew myself when I went to Canada, and they kept my bag in Cuba. Kept my bag. And there's something that bothered them in my bag. And I thought it was over, you know, my bag was gone. When I got to Canada, it was my bag. So I went back and forth with them. I had a lot of help. When I had to have somebody from Cuba go, have them open the bag, check it. Usually they'll steal all the stuff. By some miracle, I got it all back. It cost me a lot of money, but I had to pay it off. But there was, you know, when you do things like that, you know, it's not like going to the Bahamas. You've got to be prepared to, especially when you travel alone, if you're with a group, it's one thing. Travel alone, you got to be prepared that anything can happen. If I got into trouble, there's no United States to help me. Just like I got stopped in a traffic violation, I really wasn't. I made a U-turn and I shouldn't. And these cops that are $10 a month, you know, and they would love to have a little bit of authority. And so he is saying this and that. And, you know, who knows what, if you mouth him, they can arrest you. They can do anything. They have full power. Anyway, you know, it's just a little scary because you're in a country. I wouldn't be afraid in Rome or Italy, you know, because I knew I could call the consulate, talking to reasonable people, but not all these people are reasonable. Mm-hmm. They're good people, you know, but you just don't know. That's the fear you have of going into countries like that, you know, into the Soviet Union or Poland or anywhere, you know. I mean, not so much now, but when it was the Soviet Union, it was before Perestroika, and we were going on, you know, like I told you, the KGB came in the train. I mean, how do you know what they... It's a judgment on their part. They either throw you in jail, they either create an international incident, which, depending on the timing, they can do anything they want. But maybe they want to do that. Maybe they want to create an incident. Or maybe they don't, you know. So how do you know? And so you either have to go totally clean, or you have to be willing to take the punishment if it happens. Mm-hmm. But you better be sure that you're doing it for the right reasons.
Mm-hmm. What I'd like to do is to get some idea from you. We're sitting here in the midst of all of these awards, photographs.
Right.
Can you tell us something about what we're sitting in the midst of here? What these things mean to you?
Well, it means a lot to me because, and I do the same thing at home. I'm a buyer. I had this article in the Chicago Tribune. I've had some articles throughout the United States mostly, and even in Mexico, on how to buy, because we do business on how to buy out of the country. So I surround myself with things that I bought, and every you know, like JNF with the trees, is every tree has a birth certificate. Everything I have has a birth certificate, especially at home. I could point to this and I remember where I bought it, how I bought it, and so I'm just not buying things, I'm buying something that means something to me. And I can tell you the experience in every one. So you're looking around, you know, it's just a kind of my life. You know, I've gotten awards, and I got a negative award from the Israel Bonds. I've been the lead honoree for JNF. I've gotten the humanitarian award from the Tree of Life. I've gotten a lot of awards, and I've created, I think I told you about my Guardian of Israel award that I created. To me, that's more meaningful. It's nice to get awards, but you don't need to get awards to know what you're doing. It's nice to be recognized. And I've been recognized for a lot of things. It really takes time, I'd rather spend time honoring somebody else than I would honoring me. I would really hesitate. The last big honor I got was the B'nai B'rith gave me the B'nai B'rith Humanitarian Award. The only reason that I had accepted it at the time, well, twofold. Jay Horn was working with me. He since passed away. And I really wanted him to it would have been fine for him to get the award, not me, but he couldn't get the award without me because he was working with me and it wouldn't have been appropriate. So I accepted it based on the fact that we were co-respondents of this award. And that was really meaningful to me because, to say that both of us are humanitarians, as I say, since he passed away. If you could be, we're all vehicles, leaders are vehicles, and if you're awarded, sometimes it's part to raise money for the organization, part of it is inspire people for the organization, and when you get past it all, it's very nice, but it's time consuming, and right now, if somebody came to me with an award, unless it was a pretty simple basic award, I'm really not interested. I'm past the award stage. Unless it was the Nobel Peace Prize. I've gotten a lot of exposure. I probably have more exposure than most people in the community. A lot of it I've created because I needed it to do what I needed to do. To get that amount of exposure, people, it's good and it's bad. The good part is that it's allowed me to do a lot with the people. The bad part is that every time somebody sees me, I have to go through the whole thing about Cuba. When are you going to Cuba? I'd like to go. It's a trip. How's Cuba? What do you think of Elion? It's a responsibility, and you really have to answer the questions, you don't just slough somebody off. So, fame, which I don't consider fame, but fame within the framework of what I'm doing, has its price. It really has its price. Moving on with my brother's brother thing, I will probably be able to help that organization, and they help millions of people. They ship $85 million in goods and time. And I know that I have enough knowledge of things they don't know to be able to help them. Otherwise, I'm not interested. I'm not interested in having my name on a board or having my name in another organization. I could retire. I could retire from that now and feel no guilt that I leave anybody. I'm not doing my share. I haven't done my share in my life. But I think that people that are really devoted to this type of thing, once they get it in their blood, it's hard to get it out. It's a backup. And I think, you can name the people. You take like a Milda Eisner, for example. Milda can't get enough of them. That's pretty much it. I'm glad you came back because really I just gave you the peripheral things of my life, I think a lot of these things are pretty important. The fact that of the aspects of these things that have happened, because I think that part of it shows that I or anybody, and when I say I mean we, generally, but I'm willing to do whatever it takes to accomplish what I have to accomplish. If it means throwing myself into danger, I'll do that.
Wow. Sounds to me like you've been preparing for this all your life.
In a way, I have, yeah.
As it's a synthesis.
If you look at my childhood, I'm not much different today than I was as a child, you know, the way I approached it. And I really feel, and if you believe in God, you have to feel that there's somebody that's helping you out there. I couldn't possibly have done some of the things I've done without somebody being there to help me. And I guess when it's time for it to be over, it'll be over. But in the meantime, I've done what I wanted to do. You know, I always say, if I died today, and I don't want to die, but, and I look down, and I can look down and I say, you know, up to this point, I've done everything I wanted to do. There's a lot of things that I can still accomplish, but I don't feel like I've missed anything or lost anything. I've accomplished everything that I've wanted within the framework of my life. I had no aspirations to be president of the United States. I had no aspirations to be an astronaut or a nuclear scientist. I only have aspirations of doing what I'm doing. And being, you know, it's just like I say to my son, you know, be the best at what you do. If you're a garbage man, be the best garbage man. Just be the best at what you do. You know, figure out what the highest point of which where you can accomplish and be the best. You know, be the best at what you can do. And that's what I've always believed. So I try to be the best. I know my limitations. If you know your limitations, I know I can't be a nuclear physicist. I know I can't be an astronaut. I don't have the mental capability or the technical capabilities. That's just my thing. But I do know what I can do, and I know how I can accomplish it. And if we're sending a message out here, that's the message that hopefully people will get out of what I tell you. This isn't about me, it's about future people that might be interested in.
Well, it certainly sounds to me like you're not afraid to step outside the box.
No, I never have been. Never have I been. And I will continue to do whatever it takes. And as I say, if it has to end, then it will end. That's it. This was in Municipal. That's a picture of during that coup. It says Municipal. This is a picture for Columbia when I was in Columbia. I went to Columbia with I flew down, this was just with Dick Nolberg, you know Dick? I flew down with Dick to Cartagena and I thought they were gonna put drugs on that plane. And he had his own plane. When you fly down, when you go there to Columbia, if you're an American, you're a drug dealer. If you have a plane, you're definitely a drug dealer. We had to pay them off to get out of there without drugs. Without drugs, not with drugs. This is interesting. This picture, my trip to the Amazon. It's up there. There's a picture. I'll tell you a funny, this is a funny story. I'm a member of the Tree of Life. So I go to the Amazon. And I come back, and I was a member of the, this is really typical, this is a different thing, of the Red Oshawa. I was a member of the Red Oshawa. And I was looking for new center. I was not happy at the Red Oshawa. And I found a little more religion, although I'm not focusing on something. I kind of like the Tree of Life. And I met Robert Barkin one time, a really good monk. So I don't know what possessed me to do this, but when I came back, I sent him a picture, made of this picture. The picture was of a family. It was a picture was of a family in the Amazon, and it was actually it was a bare-breasted girl, you know, like they were doing in the Amazon, and her mother and kids. And I wrote Rabbi Berkman a letter. And I said, "Dear Rabbi Berkman, I just returned from the Amazon recently, and met this wonderful girl. I was taking a picture. I sent a picture. I don't even know what possessed me to do this." I said, "Although she is not Jewish, she comes from a wonderful family, and would you consider marrying us?" I was wanting to change. I wanted to see what his sense of humor was. So I go to the synagogue. This was about a week later, and it was at Bar Mitzvah. And he's walking down the aisle. I'm like, he looks at me and says, "Good to see you." And so I said, I did the wrong thing, and I threw myself on his mercy, and I'm sorry that I did it. I don't know why I did this. It just, so I go out afterwards, and I'm ready to apologize, and he said, "I got your letter in the picture." He said, "Just wanted to tell you, I've done some research on this family, and this girl that you turned in is a member of the Lost Tribe. So she really is Jewish, and I would be more than happy to marry you." It was on Saturday. I joined the synagogue on Monday. And this was an odd joke. I might have here's a letter. This was in 1986. "I've come into possession of the enclosed photograph sent to me by the chief rabbi of Brazil, Rabbi Henrique Lamal. It seems that you are in violation of Rabbi Gershon's edict of nearly 1,000 years ago outlawing bigamy in Jewish law. As you are undoubtedly aware, the Torah gives one the right to have more than one wife at a time. However, Rabbi Gershon, who was noted sage in Germany, indicated that such a practice was not in keeping with modern Jewish life. He therefore issued this edict, which was to be valid for 1,000 years. I indicated to the chief rabbi of Brazil that you were obviously functioning under the impression that the edict was no longer valid. Since the exact date of its proclamation is in question, since you assume that the 1,000 years is now up, you acted in good faith. I believe that it might be necessary for you to engage a beginning law student and a rabbi of your acquaintance to purchase tickets to Rio during the forthcoming carnival so that you can be appropriately defended in this matter before the religious court. I trust that you are aware of the gravity of such a matter, and I do look forward to addressing it in the near future. Every good wish, I have, Rabbi." Mm-hmm. This went on. I just happened to find one of his letters. This was like an ongoing thing for 2 years. But the interesting part about it is I did it. And I kind of figured he'd react that way. But I didn't know. And it was, again, probably the wrong thing to do. But in this case, it was the right thing because we're very fast friends.
Delicious sense of humor.
Yes, he has a good sense of humor. Most people don't realize what a good sense of humor he has. Well, I could really go on, but because it's my whole life. But I used to have a challenge that if I wanted to meet somebody, I would do it, just like I did with presidents or whatever. Now it's harder because of the Secret Service, and I used to know how to get around the Secret Service. We're talking 20 years ago. Going back to Nixon, Carter, I knew how to do it. And I used to, it was kind of a challenge for me to say, I could get my, there's a picture of Kennedy up there, I had a lot of Margaret Thatcher. It used to be kind of a fun thing to challenge myself to do that. And of course you can't do it anymore. Queen of England, I met the Queen of England. I don't have a picture, because not everything I have a picture of, but it was just an exercise. That's really how I started out. Before I did, I didn't really get active in Jewish affairs until the early 80s. So before that, I used to do these things more for entertainment. And then I was so good at them, you know, being able to do these things, that I said, you know, I really have to put this to good use. And that's really how I got into all this other stuff. But prior to that, it was all, I decided I wanted to be in a movie. I worked on two movies that I was in. You know, nothing worth talking about, but, you know, that's something I wanted to do. I wanted to meet the Pope. You know, I made it my business to meet the Pope. I wanted to meet, you know, this one. I wanted to do this. And it got scary because I used to also use aliases. Before, you can't do this anymore. I used to have this was one that I had in Stanley Devonshire, Britannia Movie Director. Because you're a movie director, you can get it anyway. And I used to pose as a movie director. Like if I went on a plane, I could get on a plane and I, you know, I didn't want to go through being who I was. I had this whole story about that I was Stanley Devonshire, Britannia Movie Productions, and you make, and I could do accents, so I would do.